You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Ken. Thanks for being here. You can't beat the classics for a traditional Thanksgiving feast. The turkey, the stuffing, the mounds of glorious mashed potatoes. But what about the side flourishes, those creative dishes that set your holiday meal apart? We're getting at recipe aha moments along with tried and true advice on cooking that bird. Have you got your turkey down to a science? What's your best brine or marinade? What about stuffing ingredients? What's a dish you've made that travels well when someone else is hosting? We're at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. All tips and challenges are on the table with James Shend. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine that's based in Milwaukee, and he joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. James, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
Well, what do you love most about the Thanksgiving table? You're a cook and you're in this thick and thin. What is it about that table at Thanksgiving?
Well, I mean, everything about Thanksgiving is just screaming about home goodness, comfort, family, and I just love kind of getting together and celebrating all of that. And so we have in our family, we have a number of traditions and specific recipes, but then there are things that we can play with. And so, I mean, it's something that everybody looks forward to.
You have one of your recipes. We have a number of your recipes on our site, WPR.org, on the Morning Show page. But the turkey, there's this recipe for a grilled apple brined turkey. What makes it special? Can you help us through this recipe?
Well, I mean, first off, the brining is the one key that you can do to ensure that your bird is going to be as juicy as possible. There's a little bit of science behind it. I mean, we're using a combination of brown sugar, apple juice, and some salt. And what that does is when you mix all that up along with some fresh ginger root, some cloves, garlic, and some oranges, and then you put your turkey in that and let it sit for at least 24 hours. What's going to happen, and I should qualify, you should do that in refrigeration. So then over those 24 hours, the salt and water and sugar are going to kind of interact with the turkey, and you're going to start pulling more of that liquid into the turkey. So your juicy bird is going to end up coming out of the oven, and it's just going to be incredible.
And so brine is sitting in there for like 24 hours. This is a thawed bird. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. And then what happens after you soak it in that brine for 24 hours?
So then what you're going to do is you're just going to take it out, pat it dry. What I normally like to do is let the turkey kind of come up to temperature, like room temperature, for about an hour. And then I can toss it into the oven. And all that salt and the sugar is not going to overpower the bird. You're not going to end up with a bird that tastes excessively salty. It's just going to be very, very juicy.
So what if you realize that that bird is not thawed enough for the hours that are ticking as you get closer to that Thanksgiving meal? What's a good way to, to thaw that turkey quickly?
Well, the first thing you should do is not panic. I mean, I know a lot of people kind of get freaked out that, oh my God, the bird is not completely thawed. And I'm like, don't worry about it. And a lot of times, if you have the time, go ahead, you can put it in a large sink and have cold water, like just have it floating in cold water. But make sure you keep changing that water out every 15, 20 minutes, maybe a half an hour. And because you don't want the turkey coming up to room temperature for very, very long. If the turkey is like you wake up on Thanksgiving morning and you find out the turkey is still pretty solid, don't panic again. And because what I've done is I did this as an experiment to see if you could roast a frozen turkey. And I just took the thing right out of the freezer, put it on a roasting rack, and stuck it in the oven.
Ah, what happened?
And I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, not visually. I mean, that was not a very pretty bird because it ends up baking exactly like it is frozen. So you end up kind of with a football-shaped turkey. And but it actually was really, really juicy. It took about 50% longer. and you had to do some maintenance to it as it was going on. So you have to remember that the giblets and the neck and all the other stuff are still in the cavity of the bird, and you can't get those out before you cook it. So after about maybe an hour or two, you're able to kind of move things around. You can separate the legs a little bit, and that's when you go in and you start pulling those things out when you can. Don't force it. Just give it a little bit of time.
Give it a little time. Do some minor surgery. Put it back in.
Exactly. Don't worry about seasoning the bird at this point, because it's you're now in damage control mode. So the turkey is going to be just fine. If it's a frozen bird like a butterball or something else, there's going to be a good amount of seasoning in it anyways. So you don't have to worry about that.
Talking with James Shend, who is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. What questions do you have cooking for a crowd or perhaps two people? What do you want to know about how to position dishes in your oven? What's your secret to the creamiest, fluffiest, best mashed potatoes ever? Please divulge. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, James, what are some common mistakes people make when they do make that turkey? Where do we go wrong?
The biggest complaint that I see or hear about is it's a dry turkey. And more often than not, it's overcooked. And so one of the things we have actually stopped doing at Taste of Home is publishing recipes where you stuff the dressing into the bird. That is a key thing that actually will end up with a dry turkey. And because what you have to do to be food safe, now I'm just being very honest, being food safe, is you have to get the dressing up to 165 degrees. So because all the juices from the bird that while it's cooking are going into the dressing, and while it makes a really tasty dressing, in order to be ensure that it's food safe, the dressing has to come to 165 degrees. So what that means is the turkey that's sitting around that dressing is now climbing higher than 165. So you're at about 180, 185. We like to recommend that you cook a turkey until it's about 170 to 175 in the thigh. And so that usually ends up being the breast is 165, which is just perfect. So, but if you have the dressing in the bird, then you're climbing to about 180 or higher in the breast, and that's going to ensure that your breast is going to drying out. And so that's the first thing we do, is don't stuff the bird. I know a lot of people criticize me for that one, and they just said it's great. But what I'll do is I'll put the dressing in a pan next to the turkey, and I'll start basting it with some of the drippings that come out of the bird.
How often should we be checking it, opening up that oven, and, you know, maybe basting it a little bit?
I am a firm believer of no basting. I'm flat out, don't baste it. Stick the bird in the oven and then let it go. Just don't open the oven, because what you're going to do is you're going to cool the oven down. Every time you open it, even if it's just a peek, you're going to start removing the heat from the oven. So leave it in there. But when you baste it, you're doing two things. One, you're cooling down your oven. So that's going to mean it's going to take longer to cook. But then you're pouring liquid over the turkey. So it's sitting in a 325 or 350 degree oven. The liquid is only about 212. And what you're going to be doing is cooling the turkey down. So you think you're adding flavor, but you're really not. And so you're just cooling that bird down. And again, it's going to take longer to cook. You think it's going to add moisture and ensure that. It's not doing that either, because it just rolls right off the turkey. Just watch what happens. If you start basting a turkey, it just kind of dribbles right down the turkey and back into the pan. You're doing absolutely nothing.
James Shend, keeping it real here, Taste of Home magazine deputy editor, and you can join in. What's a side dish you make that impresses your guests? What dessert is a tradition among your friends and family? What's a must for your table? Perhaps you go unconventional on Thanksgiving. Join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with recipe developer and our trusted holiday meal guy, James Shend, here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how to make your Thanksgiving meal a knockout success. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And judging from Instagram, the Thanksgiving table looks beautiful and effortless. Every dish perfectly plated, the table arranged just so. But the reality on the ground is a lot of hard work, coordination in the kitchen, and the cost. Thanksgiving dinner hosts will spend an average of $310 this year on about 10 guests. So how do you pinch pennies and still serve a crowd? What is the trick to time management? If you're a procrastinator, what do you want to know about cooking last minute? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. James Shend is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Jim is joining us from Sussex. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, what's on your Thanksgiving table?
Okay, so my sister and I, our kids are with the other parents this year, so we're going to go untraditional. I'm planning on doing a cream of mushroom soup that I will put a turkey breast in pre-cooked and to, you know, liven things up a little bit. And my question is, okay, I'm making the white sauce today for the cream of mushroom soup. But what I wanted to do was add some caramelized onions. I was wondering, does the guest have any experience with white sauce and caramelized onions? And what do I have? Do I have to watch out for overpowering the flavors with the caramelized onions?
Yeah, James, what do you know there on caramelized onions?
Well, I love caramelized onions. It's a great way to use a very, very inexpensive product of onions. And so I would not be too concerned at all, because if you're going to properly caramelize them, it's going to take you about 30, 40 minutes to do it. So you want to just cook it either in some olive oil or some butter, really, really low and slow. And you just kind of let those things caramelize all by themselves. You're going to end up with a very, very sweet product. So when you add it to the soup, it's not going to overpower. You're not going to get a huge onion flavor, like a raw onion flavor. So I wouldn't be concerned at all.
Jim, what kind of mushrooms are you using in your soup?
I like the shiitake and the bella.
Okay. Have you
Nice combination.
Yeah, have you made this before?
Yes. Yeah, I've made plenty of white sauces, and I use mushrooms and onions all the time. It's just with it being such a light flavor, the turkey, I didn't want to overpower it. I want it to still be a turkey dinner. You know, mm-hmm. Even though we're going unconventional, it is the focus of the season, I guess. So,
well, thanks so much for calling in, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And to both of you also.
Thank you.
Well, James, you probably don't want to make everything the day of. What dishes are the best to make ahead, well ahead, if possible, of the actual meal?
So, you can actually make almost every single dish ahead of time. And this year, I'm actually planning on cooking my turkey on Wednesday. I know that's heresy for a lot of people, but I just need the oven space for that. So I'm going to do that on Wednesday, and then I'm just going to let the turkey cool down and come to room temperature and then refrigerate it whole. And then Thursday morning, what I'll do is I'll slice it up, put it in a roasting pan with some stock, and just cover it up. And then that way, I just need to put it on the stovetop and actually get the stock to a simmer and then just sit it. Let it sit for like 10, 15 minutes. Your turkey's going to heat up nicely. The only downside of that is the skin is not going to be crispy like it would if you pulled it right out of the oven. But you're going to have valuable oven space, and you're not going to have to worry about time management with that. You can do mashed potatoes ahead of time and put them in a 13x9 or another casserole dish, and then just cover it with foil and pop that in the oven. Your stuffing I kind of like to do the day of, and we can do it in the slow cooker, actually, if you've got a slow cooker, because that is a really good tool that you can just set it off to the side, and you're not using valuable stovetop or oven space for that. Rolls can be made ahead of time. So I've got a yeast roll that I'll proof a lot of it and get I can even par bake the rolls. So if it bakes for about 10, 15 minutes, I'll bake it about 8. So it's still a little bit raw or blonde looking. Mm-hmm. And then like 10 minutes before we're ready to serve dinner, I'll pop those in the oven, let them finish baking so you have hot rolls to go on the oven or on the table.
So it sounds like, you know, day of, you're just putting finishing touches on a lot of these dishes.
Yeah, I'm doing all my heavy lifting tomorrow. And I even took the day off for that. But everything can be done pretty much ahead of time. And then it's just about time management the day of.
We're talking all your Thanksgiving meal questions answered with James Shend as our guide. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. You can join in with your questions, your ideas, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Mary now, joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I wondered what he thought about using the cellophane bags that you can buy to put the turkey in. I started using that, and there is so much really, really good juice, and it's certainly easier and cleaner. And I do cook my turkey the day ahead of time, and then I let it cool and slice it up, and then I just kind of reheat it the next day. Wondered what he thought about that.
So the oven bags, I think, are a really good tool. You just have to be a little cautious because it's hard to actually get a temperature of your turkey while it's in the bag and in the oven. So just kind of watch it for a little bit. What I've also seen is it has a tendency every now and then to overcook the bird. So just be very cautious of it. Other than that, I think it's a great product.
So Mary, when you cook the bird ahead of time, you cook it in the bag, and then do you take it out of the bag once you're done cooking it, and then when you heat it up, there's no bag?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I let it cool, and then I slice it up, and I put it in an electric fry pan with a lot of the juices, and then I just heat it up on Thanksgiving Day in the fry pan.
Wow, it sounds a little bit like what James is doing here.
Great idea.
Yeah, it works really well. But it has been, I'm glad you said that it does overheat. I do use a thermometer, but it's harder. So I'll try not cooking it so long then.
Yeah, because what's happening in that bag is you're almost kind of steaming and roasting the bird at the same time, since there's nowhere for the drippings to go other than in the bag. That's why you end up with a whole lot of them, whereas a traditional roasting method, some of those drippings and juices are evaporating off. And so that's why you kind of get you notice that the skin isn't as crispy as in the bag as it would be if you did it a traditional roaster.
Mary, thanks so much. Let's go to Dennis now, joining us from New Auburn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to mention a traditional dish that our family always has every year. My wife is part Danish, and her mother and her grandmother that came over from that country always has red cabbage. Now, not a lot of people really like it, but it's always there for Thanksgiving, and it's a tradition. It's called red cabbage.
How do you fix it?
It comes in a can, and I think you just heat it up.
Okay, well, yeah.
This is very good.
James,
I had another question.
Sure, go ahead.
I remember him, he mentioned that he doesn't put the dressing inside of the turkey because does it dry it out, did he say, or what was the reason for that?
So what happens when you stuff the bird, in order to be food safe, and I'm just talking food safety here, is you get the temperature of the dressing up to 165. But what happens is the turkey that's sitting around it, in order to get the inside 165, the turkey is climbing higher than that. So anytime you go higher than 165 or 170, then the turkey starts drying out. You lose all those juices.
Do you have any ideas for red cabbage and how he could fix that?
I love the idea of red cabbage because usually it's going to be a vinegar-based cabbage. And so I love those acidic flavors with things that are mild or fatty. So like your dressing or your gravy is probably going to be pretty on the fatty side. And so I like to serve like the cranberry sauce is more the traditional acidic side that you see at Thanksgiving. But I love the idea of the red cabbage because it's going to give you that nice pop of fresh acid.
acid, yeah, and a nice kind of a, it balances out, as you say, the other flavors.
Plus,
in the
it's going to look really good.
Well, and, you know, a number of friends or family members may also have food allergies or maybe gluten free. What would you suggest there? Or vegetarian or vegan, and the list goes on.
Right. The first thing you can do is just ask. It's a, it's you hate to be the host that all of a sudden somebody shows up and they're like, well, I'm gluten free. Then I'm like, well, thank you for telling me. And so first ask everybody that is coming, and then you can start planning things around there. So for dressing, there's not a lot you can do. If you you can find gluten-free bread and use that, I have not actually tried that, but I'm assuming that it should work just fine. Because then you can pack the dressing with like a lot of nuts and fruits and things like that to help kind of bulk that up and make the focus less on the bread. But just first thing is just ask everybody what it is. And if they're like a vegan, ask them even to bring a dish.
It is Thanksgiving Prep Cooking Tips with James Shend as our guide. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine based in Milwaukee. What's a dish you've made that travels well when you have to go a distance? How do you like to dress up your veggies for the meal? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're pulling off the Thanksgiving meal on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We're getting side dish recipe ideas, how to avoid a disaster in the kitchen that could wreak havoc on the meal, and then what to do with all those leftovers. There are more than turkey sandwiches out there in the days ahead. So how did you salvage a Thanksgiving meal? What are some of your favorite meal leftover ideas? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. James Shend is our culinary guide. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. Let's go back to the phones now. Bob is joining us from Spooner. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. How is your Thanksgiving meal going? That's the big question.
Well, the plans always go very well, and thank you for taking my call and the question. So this year, I'm cooking a wild turkey, and I've cooked wild birds before, and because they're so lean, they can tend to get dried out a little bit more than normal. So I'll be brining the bird, and I'll be doing some injecting into it, but a couple calls ago, you talked about the oven bags, and it got my mind thinking. If I use an oven bag, that'll help keep some of the moisture in, but I don't know if that'll affect the meat or not. So would you think, would that help to keep the bird a little more moist by using an oven bag versus just baking it?
I think it's going to help them on the short term. And again, when I mentioned that it has a tendency to overcook those birds, that is the big key, is like just watch it as you get closer to the time that you're thinking it should be done, and then start taking the temperature. Don't be afraid to open that bag. And so just go on the end and cut it open a little bit and then take the temperature and see where your bird is at. So to me, if you can roast the majority of it, like 80%, 90% in the bag, it's going to help you with that moisture level. But then you need to open the bag to get those temperatures.
Is there a big difference? Yeah. Thanks, Bob. Is there a big difference, James, between baking that, roasting that wild game, that wild turkey, versus the turkey we buy at the grocery store?
Oh, there's a big difference. As the caller just mentioned, that it is a leaner bird. So you end up with tending to overcook those things really, really fast. And they tend to be a little bit on the smaller side, although my dad has shot some really big birds around here. And so it's just a matter of getting them fully cooked, but still juicy. Now, if you have like what my dad did one year, and he ended up with a very, very large turkey that he shot up by Wisconsin Rapids, and there was no way I was going to get this thing in the oven and know that it was going to be tender. And this thing was over about 25, I think it was about 27 pounds. And so what I ended up doing with that is actually cutting it apart, which almost made him cry. but then we braised it. And it took about 6-7 hours of braising in a white wine and mushroom sauce in order for that turkey to finally relax. So the older the bird, the tougher it's going to be, and you're going to need that low and slow cooking, especially with a braise. That is going to help you get that tender. And now my father's convinced that is the best way to cook the wild birds.
I just have this vision of him being like, here, son, do something with this.
Exactly.
Work your magic. You can work your magic and everything else. Why not this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I went up to their house, and I'm like presented with this bird, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I know in his mind, he's thinking the Norman Rockwell painting where you have this huge bird just dropped on the table. I'm like, that's not going to happen. I'm like, sorry, but I mean, we ended up with a really, really delicious bird, though.
Well, people often text or they call the host and ask, you know, what should I bring? How should the host divvy up the food and the drink responsibilities for the people who are coming to your table?
So a lot of it is on the skill of the cook. So for me, what I tend to do is when people ask what can they bring, it's like I like to I'm not a control freak, I promise you, but I like to fix the dishes that I'm going to have on for the dinner. And so a lot of times I will offer up, could you bring an appetizer? Could you bring wine? And for a lot of people, this is actually even a scary idea as well, because it's like, well, what wine do I bring? What do I think about? And so I'll even tell them, you know what? A good Pinot Noir, a Beaujolais Nouveau is a good option for you. And then they start thinking, well, what about price? I don't know about that. And I'm like, all right. And so then I even get very specific and suggest specific vineyards or wineries. And so like this bottle is about $11. And so then they kind of have a ballpark to go on. A lot of times salad is a good option. Jell-O is a good option. I mean, what Thanksgiving table isn't complete without Jell-O? And but the main items, I don't want to be surprised with something that someone shows up with and says, oh, well, this needs to go in the oven. And I'm like, I've already got everything planned out. So the cold dishes are really good options to bring. Pie is another one for people that it's really easy for them to bring and transport. They're not having to worry about heating it up, and you're not having to worry about managing it with your oven.
Well, when you said Jell-O, I immediately thought of the kids around the table. Are there any dishes that they really appreciate at your Thanksgiving table?
So my niece specifically has asked for macaroni and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not a big fan of turkey. She once was, but she's like, I don't like turkey anymore. And so I want macaroni and cheese. And I'm like, well, that's fine. For a while I was living in the South, and every Thanksgiving table had a dish of macaroni and cheese on it. So I'm like, that's not a problem. Mashed potatoes are a great kid dish because it's pretty bland and neutral. Doesn't have to be boring. But the kids tend to gravitate to that. If you have a lot of kids, then just keep the spice levels down.
Well, when you mentioned salad, you have this slow-cooked sausage dressing for a salad dressing. What goes into that?
So in that, we've got a lot of really fun fall flavors. We've got apples, pecans, sage, the sausage itself, some celery. And then the stuffing cubes, it's a very, very simple recipe. And then you just mix everything together, put it in your slow cooker, and then just let it go. And that thing will go for about 3 to 4 hours. And then you can just turn it on low or the warm setting and just let it sit there for a while.
And we have that recipe at WPR.org on the morning show page. What kinds of nuts taste best on a salad? And what do you like to put into your salad mix?
To me, I am a pecan person. I love pecans. And again, I think this is part of living in the South for quite a while.
You can just shake your tree out in
pretty
your backyard.
Pretty much, yeah. And because you could go along the side of the roads and see these huge, beautiful pecan trees, and people are just scooping up the ones that have fallen. So those are the ones that I tend to go towards the most. And when you're putting them in a salad, the key to this is to toast them first. So just put them on a roasting pan or a cookie sheet, pop them in the oven at about 350 degrees for about 8 minutes or so. The best way to judge when they're done and nicely toasted, just open the oven door, stick your nose in there, and if you can smell nice pecans, you're done. Oh. Don't look for a color change because sometimes they'll fool you. But if you can smell the aroma, you're done. And so you can do, this is one of those great make-ahead items. You can toast those pecans 5, 6, 7 days ahead of time. You can even do it months ahead and toss them in the freezer, and they're good to go.
Talking with James Shend, he's our culinary guide this morning as we break down the Thanksgiving meal. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. You can join in. Do you feel added pressure for Thanksgiving? Where do you feel the stress? How can we alleviate it? Join in with your questions and your ideas, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. James, let's talk gravy here for a moment. What's the key to making a really good gravy?
So first off, you're going to need a lot of it. I mean, everyone is like, there's not enough gravy. And a lot of times what will happen is you're relying on the drippings coming out of the bird to do this. And if you use an oven bag, you're going to get a lot of drippings, but they're not going to be as concentrated. They're going to be a little watery because, like I said before, if you're using a traditional roasting method, some of that liquid is going to evaporate, so it's going to concentrate those flavors. Typically what I will do, and this I'm kind of an oddball in this, is I will take the bones from the turkey from last year and I will
wait from last year.
From last year.
Okay.
And this is last year. I will simmer the bones with just water, onion, celery, and carrots, and just simmer that and get a really nice concentrated broth. And then I'll reduce it down as much as I can. So I'll start out with probably about a gallon and a half of water, maybe a little bit more, and then reduce it down to about 2 cups. And then you can freeze that. And it will freeze for the entire year. And then that is what I use as the base of my gravy for this year. And so I'll thaw it out, add a little bit more liquid to it, maybe some white wine and some other aromatics, and then I have a good amount of stock to start with. When you pull the neck out of the turkey before you roast it this year, toss that in a pan and start that simmering. You can throw in the giblets as well and get a good hearty stock. If you're needing to supplement it, chicken stock works really well is a good option. So get that all that stuff going. And then what I tend to do is heavily season the gravy because you're not going to need a lot of it, but you're putting it on things like a bland mashed potato or the turkey, which isn't the most powerful flavored thing on the table. So you want to have a sauce that has a good amount of punch to it.
Well, sometimes where I go wrong in that gravy is that I forget to keep stirring it, and then
Yes. All
that gunk gets stuck on the bottom of my pan.
That's a big key. You got to keep that thing stirring because the thicker the liquid, the more it has a chance to settle on the bottom and scorch. So this is where you can enlist one of those younger family members to come in, and it's like, okay, your job is to sit and stir this. And so they love the task and just kind of keep feeding them things, and they're usually pretty good.
We're talking about how to make our Thanksgiving meal festive and delicious, practical. James Shend is our culinary guide. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. So how do you cut down on your prep? Are you a mise en place kind of person? Do you prep all your ingredients ahead of time? What are your tips for saving time and money on the Thanksgiving meal? Join in, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment, more tips from James Shend here on the Ideas Network. We're getting tips on planning and executing the Thanksgiving meal, the savory dishes that will impress even picky guests. You're with us here on this Prep Day in the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. AAA predicts more than 49 million Americans will jump in their cars, travel 50 miles or more on Thanksgiving. So what dish travels well? As a host, what do you have your guests bring to help cut down on your chores in the kitchen? Still time for your tips, your challenges, your recipe ideas, 800-642-1234. James Shend stays with us. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. Let's go back to the phones now. Eric is joining us from Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning. Say, what was the recipe for the brine again?
Oh, he wants to go back to some brine action. Thanks, Eric. Yeah, we started the top of the show with this amazing recipe, which you can find at WPR.org. James, what is in that concoction?
So the first thing you're going to do is take 2 quarts of unsweetened apple juice and then add 2.5 cups of brown sugar, 1 cup of kosher salt. And this is important that it's kosher salt, because if you're using regular table salt, you're going to need a little bit less. And then 4 ounces of fresh ginger root and 15 cloves, the whole cloves, some garlic, bay leaves, and you simmer that until the sugar and the salt have fully dissolved. And then you take it off the heat, add in 3 oranges that you've quartered, and then 3 quarts of cold water. You need it to be cold, almost even ice water temperature, and bring that brine temperature down. And then you put in the turkey and make sure the turkey is fully covered and submerged, and then you just pop it in the refrigerator.
Why do you need that water to be ice cold?
Because you want to bring the brine temperature down to about 40 degrees.
Okay.
And so when the turkey goes in, we're keeping the turkey at a very safe temperature. Anything above that, and then the bacteria has a chance to start growing, even if it is in such a salt and sugar solution. We still want to keep it at 40 degrees.
Well, we have on the dessert table here Grant, who emailed to say a uniquely delicious pie for Thanksgiving is a parsnip pie made with roasted parsnips. It resembles a pumpkin pie in texture, but is earthy, sweet, and spicy. Have you tried this before, James?
I have never even heard of this before, and it sounds fascinating. I mean, I love parsnips, and that was one of the vegetables that we never had growing up because my mother hated them. And when I discovered them, I'm like, this is a really cool vegetable. And I never thought of it as a pie, but I'm like, the flavors to me, it's almost like that licorice flavor would go really, really well in a pie form.
Well, let's talk about pies here. You have a recipe for the Texas pecan pie, and we've both lived in the Deep South, so I can imagine this pecan pie is pretty amazing.
This one is special. It is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for the ones that are on a diet. We've got a lot of sugar in here, and what is interesting about this one is it calls for a little white vinegar. And what that does is if you've had a pecan pie that is like, you know what, it's insanely sweet. It's really good, but it's really, really sweet. That vinegar in there is going to help balance the sweetness just a hair. You're not going to notice it. You're not going to say, well, what's vinegar? It's acidic in here. It's like, nope, it's going to pull some of that sweetness away, and you're going to focus more on the pecans.
Yeah, it's like you can feel that sweetness in your back molars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that type of sweetness.
I mean, it's awesome. I love it, and especially like Friday morning, I'm like, there's always a piece of pecan pie on my breakfast plate.
When you go to buy pecans, though, that are bagged, what should you be looking for?
So the ones I tend to go towards are the smaller. The smaller, to me, tend to be a little bit more flavorful. But I also look for the expiration date. I'm looking for the one that is far out as possible so I know those pecans are fresh. And if you can actually smell them, that is a good indicator. If it smells a little bit off, trust your nose. And 'cause nuts are a lot of oil are in the nuts. And so oils have a tendency to go rancid over time. And so if they're not properly stored, the nuts can start turning on you. And so that's why you are always recommended to freeze nuts instead of putting them in the pantry.
And we have that Texas pecan pie, by the way, on the morning show page at WPR.org. James, you also have a bourbon chocolate pecan pie variation. What's going on with that pie?
So that was one that I've been playing with for quite a while. And
pet project.
Yes, because I love pecan pie. We all know that. But I'm also a huge bourbon lover, and I also love chocolate. And so I'm like, how can we combine this? And so, again, when I was living in the South, one of my excursions was up into Kentucky Derby country. And they have something called a Derby pie. And so that incorporates chocolate into the pecan pie. And then I'm like, well, why can't we add bourbon to this? Because most recipes for pecan pie have like a teaspoon, tablespoon of vanilla. And I'm like, well, let's substitute some bourbon. And then over time, I could see how much bourbon I could get in there. and without affecting the texture. And the key to me is about a third of a cup of bourbon. Anything more than that, and you're going to start to lose that structure of the gel. So for normal, like 9-inch pie, I would be safe and go with about a quarter of a cup.
Yeah, that bourbon interacting with the pecans must be really an interesting taste profile.
It is so delicious. And it's not for the faint of heart, because that bourbon flavor is pretty potent, especially if you're going to use about a quarter of a cup of it. If you don't want it in your face, then pull it back to about 2 tablespoons. Another trick for you to do is add a little bourbon to the whipping cream. And so when you whip that up, you kind of get a bourbon flavor out of that.
Talking with James Shend, deputy editor of Taste at Home magazine that's based in Milwaukee. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. So James, after the table is cleared, that dinner is over, what are some of your favorite leftover ideas?
So in our family, one of our big traditions is the next morning, we love turkey sandwiches. And it's very easy. It's a very easy thing to do, to use up a lot of the leftovers, and pretty much everything goes on the sandwich. I'll start out with just toasting some good bread, and then I'll put a layer of dressing on it. And then some cranberry sauce will go on that, then the turkey, and then I'm always key to sprinkle a little bit of salt directly on the turkey, and then whatever else you want can go on that thing. But if you look at tasteofhome.com, there's a lot of other great recipes for using leftover turkey. And one of the ones that I love to do is a calzone. So you just take a regular pizza dough, and you can buy just the uncooked pizza dough, roll it out, layer it with the turkey. You can even throw in the dressing in there, any of the vegetables that are in there, and some cheese. Fold it up, crimp the edges, and then pop that in the oven. Way back earlier in this call, when I can't remember his name, who was going to be doing the mushroom soup, that is a great way. You can shred the turkey and add it to any other soups. You can also just freeze the turkey. It's a great idea to just have that sitting in your freezer. Put it into a freezer bag and get as much air out as possible. And because that is going to be another key for you to avoid freezer burn, is get as much air out of the bag as possible. And this is where one of those bags is actually better for you. So I'll put it in there. I'll zip it maybe 7/8 of the way, and then I'll try to get as much air out. And then you can even take a straw, stick it in the opening, and suck out as much air as possible, and then zip it shut.
Really?
And then you're good for about 6 months in the freezer.
Yeah, and so 6 months later, you can have it all over again.
Right, and then it's great for sandwiches, and it's a quick meal that you can have on the go. And the soups freeze well. The calzone, you can even freeze that thing unbaked and then pop it in the oven later.
Well, the curious thing is there an extra seat at your Thanksgiving table?
There's always an empty seat.
Well, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
James Shend is the deputy editor of Taste at Home magazine, based out of Milwaukee, and he joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. You can find several of his recipes that we talked about on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.